first, not even in high school. Roadie time was early May. It was late April, early.
Gotcha.
Yeah, you do.
It's working.
I've only been in this area for a couple of years. I mean, is this unusual what happened this winter?
I don't think it's much worse. I mean, I can remember years where it was like this up until mid-June.
Yeah.
Right around Labor Day it would change. But I think because we got a little more snow this year, so we can see it, and it seemed a little worse. It's not as bad as 96.
Oh, oh.
That was.
Yeah.
In 96, we had this huge ice storm right after Christmas. You know, did a lot of damage. And then, just as we were recovering from the ice storm, we had this. We had all this snow. And then, right after the snow, we had this real warm rain. So,
climbed
up on
the
snow. And we had the flood.
That's what
burned. In 96, was that all of the Northwest, or was that just the Portland area?
No, it was pretty much Oregon that got hit. You know,
the jet stream pattern.
I'm asking because I was watching the weather with great interest this winter to see how you had the cold air coming from the heartland through the gorge and creating the microclimate here where the wet weather, moist air would come in over top of the freezing air and cause the ice storms.
The thing was funny, in the newspaper that year, 96, because there had been the ice storm and the snow and then the floods, there's a headline in the Oregonian that says, "What's next? Locusts?"
Right. Because wasn't there even that fall? Wasn't there a big windstorm on top of that, like that fall?
I don't remember. Well, I do remember.
Because she was telling me, well, it would have been the fall of 95, because that was when she was living over in Tualatin, and she got home, got the car in the garage just as the neighbor's tree came in, and the tree came down right behind her in the driveway, flattened her husband's truck. But
I remember one fall back then when they said we'd had rain for like 88 out of the last night.
Public Safety Advisory Board meeting for March 27th is called to order. We'll begin with introductions. I'm Chair David Baker.
Chris Duncan, PSAB board member.
Kathy Salvaccio, and I'm not a member of your board, but we're here to present.
Bill House.
Peter Green, member of various organizations around here, but tonight with the Alliance for Inclusive Community at Westman.
Mark Gilbert, member of the PSAB.
Dan Nielsen, member of the PSAB.
Tom Friedland, part of the board.
Bob Martin, the council liaison.
Okay. So next item is a review of the agenda. Has everybody had a chance to take a look at it? There's going to be one change tonight for the Youth Advisory Council mental health night presentation. There was a schedule conflict, so that's off for tonight. We'll try to reschedule for some point later. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. And we should probably vote. So ayes in favor of approving the agenda?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Okay, next item is the approval of the minutes from February. Did everybody get the email from Tony with the... Okay. Entertain a motion to accept the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. And ayes?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, is there any community comments for items that are not on the agenda?
We assume we're on the agenda.
Okay. Okay, so moving right along, we can jump right into your presentation.
Okay.
And I just wanted to note that the liaisons for our group are not present tonight, so we typically have Lieutenant Stradley from Westland Police Department, and Stephen Myers from Tualatin Valley Fire. And the decision was made just for them to step out. So you can present in a safe environment, and so.
Okay. We actually met with Lieutenant Stradley, and he said he was going to do that, so.
And just to say that we would not have had any problem with him being here, but that's what you decided, so that's fine too.
Okay.
I'm surprised.
Pardon me?
I did not know that.
Yeah. Okay, and there's some kind of, we'll talk through this a little bit, but we're actually not entirely clear why we were asked to refer to you, but we'll get to that in a minute. But we'd like to just take a couple minutes and kind of introduce our group and what we're about. I'm sorry for those of you for whom this is going to be the second or third time you've heard it. But anyway,
we'll ask people to memorize it. You actually have a mission statement.
And so let me pass it around. And if you've already seen it, pass it on, because I didn't bring that many. I think I brought six copies. Okay. And in any case, so we are calling ourselves the Westland Alliance for Inclusive Community. We are a group of Westland citizens, and we've sort of been going since November in one shape or another, although our actual origins started in July in the aftermath of the incident, the news about the incident with Lieutenant Newbury. And several of us that got together at that time and sought up and had a meeting with Police Chief Timmius, and we expressed our concerns, wanted to know what the process was, what was going to happen, et cetera. Basically, we didn't do much, and then some of us reconvened in the wake of the concerns and some of the local incidents that happened in the wake of the November election. We had heard about, incidents at the school, and there were others that came. Anyway, we've grown to an email list of about 40-some people, Westland residents, and I would say, between 10 and 15 people who are coming regularly to meetings and participating. And you can see our mission statement. Now I passed it along, and I don't have a copy. Peter can.
It seems like everybody's probably read it at this point. But I think Kathy pretty much got it how it came together. Has everyone had a chance to read this? Yeah. Okay, I'm going to read it because it just gets us in a nutshell. Yeah. So we're a diverse group of Westland neighbors working to ensure that all members of our community have equal opportunities to participate in the quality of life that our town offers, that all of our neighbors are safe from hate crimes, abuse, or harassment, and that no person or group is subjected to discrimination, bigotry, or prejudice. To achieve these goals, we're collaborating with local government, schools, neighborhood associations, faith, and civic organizations. We advocate legal protections, community education, and neighborhood involvement. We believe that Westland is a caring community, and that working together, we can ensure the support and protection that everyone deserves. So I think it's fair to say sometimes we've talked with some people, and they hear about it, and they say, well, we don't have this much of these kind of problems here, but the fact is we do have some of these kind of problems here, and they were made, we were made aware of them by various people that we met with here. As Kathy pointed out, we met with students from the high school. Everyone recalls probably the incident at the high school earlier this year. If you don't, there was a walkout because there were a number of racist and bigoted remarks and graffiti and so forth that the school and the students, to their great credit, kind of formed a student group around that to address these issues and are continuing to do so. It's the Westland High School United, I think is what they're calling themselves. So, and we have been in touch with other neighbors and so forth that we know. That this community is, and it's been a predominantly white community, as we all know. Just look around the table here tonight. But like the rest of Oregon, it's changing. We have more diversity in our community now, and we always have had about 10% diversity in this community. So certain people have approached us with things that have happened. I'm not going to go into a bunch of details. You know, when we had the big snow, one of the members of the group, who's actually East Indian by origin, but very much an American, but someone drew a swastika in his yard outside, and we've had, you know, a number of stories brought to us. So we thought, well, it's a great community, and we love this community, so how about if we get together around these issues and try to make it, you know, a better community and actually address them. And particularly, we're an apolitical group, so no one's, you know, talking about this or that candidate or anything, but you have to be a little blind not to notice that there's been an increase in these kind of events over the last year. In fact, meeting with Lieutenant Stradley, with whom we had a really good meeting, he said, you know, there's really been an increase in these kind of events over the last 8 years. So, and he's a fellow who should know because he's got a very distinguished career up in Northeast Portland. So what we're doing as a group is taking a number of fronts, and one is meeting with the city council, which we've done and will continue to do, more to kind of push for some potential, maybe a little stronger legal address of some of the kind of issues that come up, but then we're very interested in working with the students as well and with the education, because that's a lot where a lot of it comes out, where adults maybe have learned to be more reticent and controlled about what they say. The kids are often not, and sometimes it's things they're picking up at home or wherever that come out. And then we're interested in working with the faith-based groups and the neighborhood association groups. So I would say really the areas that we're looking at are to kind of inform the town a little bit more, to look in some areas for kind of legal or ordinance kind of addressing of some of these issues, to work with, I'm not on the education committee, so I don't want to talk a lot about it, to work with the schools, and Bill's on the education committee, and to work in a kind of an educational front too, which is one of the things that we really came to talk with you about tonight.
Yeah, and others. But Bill, why don't you say a word about the education?
Yeah, we have a group that's probably a core group of about 10 people now. We've met several times, and we've gotten involved in talking to some of the teachers at the schools. We've talked to some of the students. We have taken a stance that what we would like to do is support some of the student groups, and the Westland Unity Group is the first one that we've looked at. They were the ones who had organized the walkout. They had some issues that they saw that they didn't think were right within the school regarding the language that was being used, regarding, you know, the graffiti that was mentioned, and several other things. But I found them to be a very articulate group of kids. And with good ideas. One of the first things that we're doing is they want to bring a showing of a film called Black Girl in Suburbia, which was produced by a former Westland student. And so they're making arrangements with her to come, and they will have a showing of this down at Westland High School. As an example of what we're trying to do, we have supported them financially. We've raised money so that we can, you know, pay the fees that are necessary to get this in. So we're really looking to connect into the schools on the basis of what can we as the community around here do to support the things that the students would like to do regarding diversity and issues that are coming up around that. So that's been our thrust so far with this.
Okay. And I'll just say a quick word about our third committee, which is, you know, basically community outreach with a focus on neighborhood associations and faith-based institutions. We're really still trying to figure out what we're going to do around there, but we may, are bringing the knowledge of our organization to neighborhood association meetings. We may schedule some kind of event in the next year or so that is more, we're we're talking about some kind of storytelling event where we get diverse members of the community to really tell their personal stories about, you know, their circumstances and how they came to be here in Miss Lynn and what their experiences, that kind of thing. What, you know, we're still relatively young, and so we're still trying to figure out our direction as well as our structure and many other things.
Did you want to talk a little bit about the meaning of the city council?
Yes, and I thought we should move to that Bradley. Because the reason we are here today is that we had had a sit down with Mayor Axelrod in sometime in February, we had, you know, it was one of his meet and greets. And we had talked at that point about, about how to move this agenda forward. And he had originally at that meet and greet said, well, maybe we can devote one of our upcoming town halls to this issue. And so we were invited to present to the town hall, to the city council, our ideas. And so we came to the city council on... It was something like March 6th, and we made a very specific proposal for the, a kind of event that we thought would be good. And I will pass around the proposal that we made. We're no longer calling it a town hall on this. Actually, I should probably keep one for myself.
Okay. We'll share. We'll keep the story.
Right. In any case, so we made it, you know, what we were proposing to them was a more or less a kind of different style of a community forum, not your traditional town hall where the mayor stands up and takes questions from the audience. And I'll go into that in a second. But essentially, after we finished making this proposal, Councilman Martin and a few others said, "Well, maybe," and including Russ said, "Well, this isn't maybe a town hall, and you know maybe it should be a standalone event." And at the end of our presentation, we said, well, how do we move forward on this? And they said, well, go work with the public, the Citizens Public Safety Advisory Board, which kind of surprised me because if you've heard our presentation right now, you know that we're much broader than the issue of public safety, although that's, you know, there. I mean, we want to do awareness raising, education, we want to support the schools. We also want to attend to the sort of policy and legal matters when there are incidents of real concern against minorities or people of color or whatever. But it goes beyond public safety. But anyway, they referred us to you, so here we are. And we can kind of talk about this. Let's kind of review what we had proposed. We had seen, an event that took about an hour and a half. We would like to have a panel of people presenting with a representative from the city government, either the mayor or a member of the council or something, or whoever is the right person, a representative from youth, probably one of the members of the Westland High School Unity Club who've been so active. And then we were thinking possibly a member from a faith-based association. Although we haven't really built up our relationships yet with the churches in the area, but we might, and the community at large, possibly one of a member of our group or somebody who has an experience to bring to bear, and a panel moderator. So we saw each of these panel members being asked to speak for 4 minutes or so to the following questions, in your organization experience, how do you understand the issues of inclusion and diversity, or how have you experienced them here in West Lynn? How are you responding these issues or any concerns about the lack of inclusion and diversity, and what more can be done to improve the situation in West Lynn. So just based, you know, just in a nutshell, what's the problem? You know, what kind of response are you making? What more can be done in very you know, sort of brief terms, and then open it up for conversation. So that was our idea, and that's still our idea. We think it's a pretty good idea. We would, you know, hope to get a good cross section of the community to come and really, really grapple with these issues in a very honest way. And that's what we were proposing. I will just mention in passing that our group, we don't have a specific agenda, but we have been bouncing around for ourselves the idea of a voluntary human rights commission that could be established, that would both work to kind of promote, you know, sort of celebrations of things like Human Rights Day and maybe cultural diversity kinds of events, but it would also take complaints. So it's an idea that is not fully formed yet. It's an idea that, you know, we've been kind of discussing. But, you know, so it might be one of the kinds of things we'd like to raise in this, but we don't want to present anything, you know, fully baked. I think it's something we would like to kind of put out to people and see their thoughts about it. So that's essentially what we had in mind, and since we've been referred to you, I guess we're here to talk together about, you know, what do you think? Should we move forward to organize this together, or is there anything else you think we've really got to mention here? No?
Not from that standpoint.
Okay.
I guess it'd be interesting hearing from this group, from your standpoint, because we were a little bit mystified exactly why this group were pleased that it's this group.
And we were a little disappointed.
Maybe seeing your role a little bit more.
If I can
help this with interface.
You know, my impression of it, you remember at that meeting, I love the idea of us having a human rights commission, and I wanted it formed.
Yes, you did.
Then, and there was resistance to it, I think, by Commissioner Perry, primarily, and I didn't really understand the resistance. But later, I began to think that I don't know. No, I still don't understand it. It's such a good idea, but maybe they're afraid that, you know, if you formalize an organization like that, it makes problems visible that aren't as visible now. Which to me is a good thing, because if they become visible, you can put on
do something.
Right, exactly.
I don't want to speak for, you know, for why Brenda, you know, did that, but part of the, well, you know, do it through the police advisory board and the parks and rec was sort of a sweeping it aside. It was sort of a positive negative answer. You know, it was a way of disposing of it without actually acting on it. Now, keep in mind, this was the same meeting when we formed an arts commission to decide how to spend money for the arts that we have none of. We have and haven't had for years. But we felt it was important to create an arts commission, but not a human rights commission. So I'm going to continue to support the idea of a Human Rights Commission, because I think the work is to be done there is much more than, as you said, it's not just, you know, handling complaints. Mm-hmm. It's much more important, much more work that we have to do. That's did I detect a Southern accent?
I was born and raised in Richmond, Virginia. Well, haven't lived there for about 30 or 40 years.
That's okay. I was born and raised in East Tennessee, and I know that you know, because we're probably close to the same age, you probably grew up in a segregated South to some degree.
I grew up at a time when the court-ordered desegregation rules were being implemented.
Right.
I must have been in about the eighth grade at that point in time. So yes, I grew up at that time.
Well, you know how in that environment it was. Westland reminds me of that because we have this white enclave, just like we had white enclaves there, and yet we still had this very diverse culture around us. And if you were within that enclave, you could maintain this illusion that you were fair-minded and that people were treated fairly. You didn't have to come in contact with it. And a lot of what the people in the South have gone through is what we're just beginning to face here. Mm-hmm. So the reason I brought it up is that as we start this work of bringing people together here, there have to be solutions that have been, solutions that have been screened and vetted and worked in the South that we could draw on. And I hope that your group will look at that because there's the little problems, where things flare up, the ones that we've mentioned, like the swastika and the remarks and those things. Those are just the breaking the surface. Mm-hmm. But we've got this whole thing under the surface, uh-huh. And that's what I hope the Human Rights Commission will address, mm-hmm. and address positively. Mm-hmm. And I know there are ways in the South that's done, and the South benefits from it. I'd bet it's a lot more fun living in the South now than it was back then.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with what you're saying in part, but I detect a difference here, and I'm new to this area. I just moved in about 2 years ago. We were living out of the country for years before we came back here. And what I see is a little bit of a difference in that when I grew up, there was malicious, aggravated racial tension. What I see here is, and just a little background on me, I have 5 daughters. 2 of them are still at home. They're both adopted. One of them's from China and one is from Kazakhstan. And so I hear things from them. And they basically said to me, well, people say things to us sometimes, and they aren't being mean, but they don't think about it. They don't think about it. So I don't see it quite as malicious as it was when I grew up. I see it more as just a lack of understanding because people haven't lived with that much diversity. So that's my only comment.
Well, then I appreciate that, and I think that's the challenge facing, hopefully, what will become a Human Rights Commission, is to give people enough contact, so that they begin to understand and know each other, and if we can do that, I think these other problems go away because they met each other. The problem was always the segregation of people, the isolation, which creates a lack of knowledge, which creates fear.
A fear and a sense of other. Right, exactly.
So the more you get people involved with each other, to me that's the way to go at it. So I applaud your efforts, and I wish we'd had full support at the council meeting. I think if you keep it going, and do some things, that it'll be much easier to speak. And from my perspective, I can't talk about the rest of it, but from my perspective, it'll be much easier to, for it to get better back.
Is there a way that the Parks and Rec, because that was one of the other ones, could help facilitate such a meeting as this? I think 2 things we're looking at in the town that could be kind of good starters, besides us going to talk to the neighborhood associations and faith-based groups, which we're doing, would be a sort of call a standalone town hall like this for which we need facility and so forth to put this on. I think we're happy to help actually put the event on, or even just facilitate putting the event on, but of course it needs a place to do it, and maybe some help with publicity and that sort of thing. And the other thing is the showing of the film that Bill mentioned, because there'll be people speaking at that as well, and it'll be at the high school, and they've got a big auditorium, so we'll be trying to get a fair amount of people, and I think incrementally we're looking at getting some other things in as well. And I just think there may be broader community conversations to have around some of this. You find a lot of people in favor of human rights. I mean, personally, I can see how people can can see how maybe it makes your town look bad. I actually see it polar opposite. I think it's feather in the cap of any town. Portland has one that, you know, has such a thing because it means, well, you're actually paying attention.
So I think there's positive steps you make it.
So I think the main thing would be, is there help here or in Parks and Rec and actually to put such thing on?
So, yes, and let me jump in here real quick because this is a multifaceted issue, and the Public Safety Advisory Board, you know, is a piece of the overall conversation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think just looking at it, you know, the group has some recommendations in regards to the police department with, you know, diversity training. Mm-hmm. There's been some concerns expressed about, you know, racial profiling. There's been a suggestion about Human Rights Council, Ombudsman. Mm-hmm. I think for the group, it would be good to hear from your group a little bit more about that, because I think at some point down the road, we can make a recommendation to City Council that would be taking a look at, you know, your recommendations. And so I had kind of foreseen this as we could listen to your group tonight, and then at the next meeting, we could speak with Lieutenant Stradley and Stephen Myers from Tualatin Valley Fire and hear from them. And then at that point, in May, you know, come up with some recommendations based off of some of the things that you've recommended to council. So I think it would be really helpful for the board to hear more about those aspects of what you're doing. And as far as the event goes, just speaking with Lieutenant Stradley, he's quite keen.
He expressed that.
So
I don't know that we went into detail about this event with him. We had told him about the school event that we're, and he was.
We talked with him about this, though. We didn't go into detail.
We did talk to him about it. Okay.
We had a really good meeting with him because we did have, I mean, people have brought up concerns. There's been a lot of changes in this town, and Stradley pointed that out. Mm-hmm. You know, there are members of the group who are people of color who, you know, have to hark back real far to where, you know, people would. We have stories of people of color getting pulled over in their own neighborhood and being asked things like, what's your business here? And so forth like that. We also know that sometimes it's the neighborhoods calling in because it'll be people of color and they'll get called in as suspicious people. And the police have to answer those calls. So we had concerns around that. We had concerns because of Officer Newberry.
We've heard from various neighbors, including members of our group, how they've observed a sort of disproportionate number of the Latino landscape workers being stopped, you know, on their way to and from the houses they're doing, and one of our members had you know, a lot of landscaping done around the house that they moved into, and there was some crime in that neighborhood, and immediately the police zeroed in on the landscape workers without having any other evidence or reason for suspecting them. So I mean, we keep hearing this. We don't have, you know, hard facts or data. I spoke to you, Bob, about, you know, kind of where can we see the data, and a little bit about our police force and things like that. So a lot of this is anecdotal, but it's enough to give us a concern. Another thing I think we have some concern about is the tendency, both among perhaps the police, but also among the public, to be very dismissive of some of these incidents. When our member who had the swastika drawn in the snow and at his house, he did call the police, and I think they didn't. What exactly happened, Bill? They didn't essentially do anything.
I don't know. I know that Rishi did contact.
He contacted them, and I think they sort of said, "Well, what can we do?" A number of people on the local listserv expressed a lot of concern. Others were like, it's just probably some high school kids, you know, just getting, you know, a little out of hand. Well, those high school kids are the ones who did the graffiti and called the names in the high school and so on. The fact that they're so dismissive of these things happening, even if they are high school kids who don't have, you know, a more malicious purpose, is a problem. That, you know, it's a problem that the people aren't calling people on these and holding people accountable for this kind of action.
What would you want them to do? What would you want the officers to do in handling it where you said they did nothing? And then you said, well, somebody said this, somebody said this.
Yeah, we got a lot of hearsay.
Where are the issues that you want something done?
Start by investigating. At least start talking to some of the neighbors. What did you see? Okay. Who might you have, you know, do you have any ideas how this might have happened? I mean, you could do something, and you may not be able to get a complete answer, but, you know, show some concern about it.
Do you know what the officer said to the
individual? I'm trying to remember, but I thought it was, I mean, unfortunately, Rishi is not here. But I think, you know, they took note and they went away. I think that's my understanding of what happened. I don't think there was any investigation. Essentially, if I recall correctly, and I stand ready to be corrected if I'm wrong.
And I'm not saying that there was, but you don't know what transpired afterwards. If it was briefed to other officers.
Well,
whether they talked to the school
I don't know what happened here in the police department.
And whether there was anything else that was done into it, but you're now, based on what somebody else said, you're now, you know, creating a problem.
And
I'm not saying that there isn't a problem. I'm just saying that you're concerned about people reacting or not reacting and not having facts, but you're reacting to not having facts.
We can get the facts on this case because it's from our members.
I'm saying is that if you're going to bring up an issue of anything, you know, let's get some specifics as to what it is.
That's fine.
There's been, you know, you said there was a swastika on somebody's lawn. There was some graffiti at the school. I don't know what the graffiti was. If it was racist.
Know. We can get that.
No, I'm just saying, I don't know. I'm not familiar with it. I didn't hear the incidents.
You did not know about this.
I did know about a swastika on somebody's lawn.
Right.
I didn't hear about a protest or anything from school, but my daughter is now out of the Westland district.
Right. Okay.
And I'm not here, you know, 24 hours a day.
Okay.
As somebody sitting here in town listening to this, I'd like to know specifically what the concerns are. Because if you're wanting me to come to some meeting to learn about this, I'd like to know the specifics of where the problems
are. Well, we didn't
come
today. We came here because we thought we were going to work with you on this event. If what you want,
I'm just asking for me. I'd like to know more about what it is that you're seeing.
We've got a lot of these kinds of reports, and some of them are from our members, which are firsthand. Some of them are secondhand. One of our members, Julia, who has lived here for 22 years, had a long story about how her son, who's now 25 and has moved out of the area, was constantly pulled over when he was a teenage boy, and he, you know, the conclusion was this because he was she's African American, he's African American. So there's a lot of those kinds of stories. Do we know exactly what the police's motives were? Do we know exactly their side of the story? No, we don't.
And let me step into on this specific thing. We can chat later with Lieutenant Stradley and hear, you know, how that was handled.
He's not aware of it, though.
So we'll...
Because it came up in the meeting, it was interesting. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but he said, I wasn't aware of that.
What we can do is ask him
what things he is aware of, what ordinances and other things he is aware of, what police training he is aware of, because what I hear, and this is why I think this group is where you were asked to come, is because the list of people that you've put on this event are all people we already have relationships with.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why this committee in particular to come to.
And that's true.
So I don't want you to think you're wasting your evening.
Okay.
And we can certainly help, and we have helped other groups.
when they've come to us and said, we'd like to facilitate and we'd like to do outreach, and when we've helped, you know, shared communication about an event, shared announcement about, you know, something happening, and we have relationships with City Council in terms of the community events folks. So I think you're in the right spot in that sense.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, education outreach is really the core of what we do.
Right.
You know, we focus mainly on disaster preparedness and,
right,
and teen driving safety. But mm-hmm. So, and I think, you know, overall, we can always learn and improve.
Right.
So even just hearing the story about Rishi, mm-hmm. you know, that's a data point for us, you know, mm-hmm. and we can go back and talk.
I mean, if you want to
interpolate a little bit, just, you know, because I think we got off in the weeds a little bit. We had a really great meeting with Lieutenant Stradley at the police force. Before that, we had a concern that was not founded yet at that point, and that's why we wanted to have a meeting with him. But before that, we met with the Oregon Peace Officers Association, which is a training organization for mm-hmm. the state, because we just wanted to get their take on all these issues. Do you guys provide this training and so forth? They themselves said, we met with a really great officer, Rick Puente, who's out of
Woodburn.
And they themselves said they kind of need to step up this sort of, you know, whatever you want to call it, diversity training and so forth. I thought, so we went with it. I'll repeat what I said to Lieutenant Stradley. I said, we didn't show up here to demand anything from you. We didn't even show up to say we necessarily want anything from you. We did show up to say that we'd like to be a community asset to the police as well as to the city government. And I think, you know, any police force or city government would like it when citizens become active and want to help. And that we did have these concerns, so that's why we were here, was to talk about those concerns. Now, he allayed some of those concerns, and to be real frank, he didn't allay all those concerns. One of the things we heard, for instance, was, and I have to tell you, we were incredibly impressed with him. Mm-hmm. I mean, his background, oh my gosh, what an asset for a town like this to get him. But one of the other things is when you hear sometimes that, oh no, I don't hear of these complaints, there can be two reasons for that. One, there really aren't so many complaints. Two, what happens a lot of times, the people who have those complaints don't feel good about stepping up to put those complaints forth on it. So there could be two reasons why you haven't heard these kind of complaints. The thing that came out about the swastika that was great was Rishi actually put it on Nextdoor. And so there are a lot of comments, mm-hmm. and I don't want to revisit the issue a lot, but a lot of the comments were, and I think we felt they were kind of unfortunate. It's just like, oh, that's just kids.
Yeah.
Well, if it's just kids, well, why are just kids drawing swastikas? Did they get this from somewhere?
Right.
And so we tend to look at, I think, you know, what you were saying, and a little bit what you were saying is what's under the ground,
mm-hmm.
and we're not coming into, you know, we're not coming to you folks either, or to West Lynn and saying, got a big problem here and we want to solve it. We're saying, we see evidence of some problem here. We suspect, because we're Americans and this is what goes on in this country, that there's a little more underground
mm-hmm.
here, particularly when it comes out in schools, and it also comes out in middle school,
mm-hmm.
by the way, and there are stories about that too. There were Be Mine, M-E-I-N, Valentines with pictures of minority kids on them and stuff like that. There's kind of, so we just looked and said, how can we be proactive
mm-hmm.
on this?
Right.
And that's essentially what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. We're not here to point out, you know, the sores and bad spots or anything like that. We're just here to try to, you know, how can we, we're a great community. How can we be proactive and be a greater community for everyone who lives
mm-hmm.
here?
Because of that, I think your point is well founded, though. If we're going to talk about a specific incident, we probably do need to have more history, particularly if we get outside of me, if we move up through this and come into more public forums talking about specific incidents.
Exactly.
I think you're right that we need to have at our fingertips more information.
If you're going to want people
that.
To
so
come to your events,
point, yes,
you
your
need to
well
draw them in with, you know, there was an incident where, you know, a black person was stopped and harassed by some neighbor for some reason. you know, they lived in the neighborhood for 5 years, but, you know, something transpired. Specific incidents are going to draw people in, but merely saying, well, we were aware that there was a protest at the high school, that, well, they had this and it was just the kids, or they thought it was just the kids. The more specific, the more likely you are to get people to come to
can get as much, you know, as much documented as we can. I mean,
it's not getting that specific, but I'm just saying if you stay in the broad generalities.
Well, they are not just broad generalities. This happened in December, this swastika. The thing at the high school happened in November.
Well, that was in the typings and on the...
All this has been in the papers. It's not, I mean, so. There's plenty of...
No, and I'm saying, you point out there's this issue of the swastika, there's the thing at the high school.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you say, well, we've had a lot of incidents.
Well, we have had a lot of incidents.
But when you just say there are a lot of incidents...
Right.
You're not motivating anybody to
right.
react to it.
I mean, I think the kind of delicate balance that we feel that we're trying to, that makes it a little difficult is that we know that these are there, but at the same time, I think that there's a sense that people will resist. this idea that their community is anything but a welcoming and safe place, or a welcoming place for everybody. So on one hand, we do want to bring these to the attention, but we also want to really engage people in a positive way around, you know, not just looking at these specific incidences, but getting to know their neighbors who, you know, may have a very different background from them, and getting them to you know, build those human relationships in a meaningful way. So it's a balance. We don't want to be accusatory, but we know that there's a problem here. And one of the things that, frankly, I think was a little disappointing about the city council meeting is that Councilwoman Perry said, you know, well, setting up a human rights commission suggests that there's a problem, and what we have in this community is a lack of diversity, and that's the real problem, is the lack of diversity. Well, I think it's both and. You know, we have some problems and we have a lack of diversity. So I think, you know, we're trying to address that and address it in a way that's going to be heard, I think.
Christopher, real quick. Christopher's queued up.
Well, again, and I think really we began this conversation even here on the board along those same lines and goals and objectives, even at a prior meeting, of how we can integrate the concerns with the work that we have already taken on as an advisory board of volunteers also. And one of those areas that we talked about was, you know, where to kind of incorporate in the agenda that we would get staff reports of when they can, within the parameters that they can, tell about follow-ups that they might have done.
You mean
as far as, because I mean, normally we have the two liaisons here from both, you know, police and fire, and, you know, there are some things that when they are under investigation, they can't compromise, but when they can share, that be part of what they can report out. The other area that I see possible connections with is, you know, where is that safe place if you can't report, you know, specifically, but want to be aware. We do have that area where today no one came, but the community comments is always a part of the agenda. And we've had other people come with other concerns. We had the one that, you know, more along the lines of disaster preparedness. We didn't know who to call. We didn't know how to get information on what to do when the trees went down, you know. But they came to us because, again, it was sort of a public safety issue. So it may be a starting point, and I would hope that it would stay, you know, a safe place, because that's one of the roles of citizen boards, is to kind of be the ears and the sounding board initially if, you know, an official type response is a little perhaps premature, but to problem solve and have some ideas. I mean, one of the things that immediately came to mind as April is approaching, having been a fair housing person for many, many years, April up until, I don't know, maybe currently, but April has always traditionally been Fair Housing Month. But it's also an opportunity to see, quiz people, do you know who the protected classes are? You know, there are quite a number of them, and do you know? And so, and that takes, you know, that involves the workplace, that involves housing besides, but it's just often that time to share that. So, you know, in terms of opportunities to kind of educate again who protected classes are, as you're doing your work. Those are just kind of my little thoughts. And then maybe I can talk to you later, because I am involved in a countywide justice group of, you know, we're kind of focusing on social, economic, racial justice, so I can see where there's opportunities to intersect and maybe fuel more bodies to help with an event than what might even be available here. So.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So we've had a couple little email exchanges. I can get back to you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of right down my alley, too. We should probably talk more about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We have a lot in common, Peter.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Chris. Yes. Council Martin?
So, you know, I've seen two aspects to, you know, the work. I think you've identified before this. One is the resolution of these specific problems, of the things that break through the surface. And I think that when the city council sit, you know, included the public safety board, they were probably just referring to those, but made a broad sweep. Because the other part of it, the education and bringing people together and the thing that you'd like to do at the town hall, raising the awareness, in creating the conversation, making that broader, that's probably something that you may want to think of as right now just the work of your group, and certainly draw on the city resources, like having Lieutenant Stradley, you know, speak at that, or having Parks and Rec help, like at any of the, like Music in the Park and the Old Time Fair and things like that, having booths where people can get more information. I mean, I see them being supportive, but not really. I think the main bulk of this second part of your work right now has to rest with your group until we can get a Human Rights Commission officially formed, and then I would see them being the ones that do that. So I just, it helps me to separate those two functions, because, you know, one's, when we're working together in both of them, but on one of them it's a little more adversarial. You know, this happened,
right?
Whereas in this one it's a general.
This is more of a general, right?
Yeah. Right. And so doing this one here is good. Now along those lines, you know, I think certainly there's a great point here about specifics. You know, there's a danger to the anecdotes in that they get passed on.
Right.
They become urban legends almost.
Right.
And when we dig into those and really look at what happened, my experience over the last 10 years in local government is that the biggest problem is misinformation. And unfortunately, we have some people in this city who love to see their name in the paper, they love to spout off, and it didn't concern anything we're talking about here, but
right.
Just misinformation is a huge problem. People, you know, take what they read as fact. And so we need to be very careful that we dig into any incident that comes up, we pursue it vigorously, and you know, and find out exactly what happened, and then make sure that we pass that back to people, because these misconceptions are destructive, you know, and they feed into the people use them to justify those prejudices and things. way or the other. I mean, there are people who are prejudiced against the police. I had a guy call me and say, we've got too many police. I said, no, I was going door to door. He said, is there anything you don't like about West London? He said, well, we have too many police. Well, we've got fewer police per thousand than out of 124 cities in Oregon. We're down at 100 in terms of the number of police per thousand citizens we have. And I talked to him more about it, and I found that he had been stopped in a traffic stop.
Really?
And he had, yeah, that was the reason that he was complaining. But I mean, people were prejudiced to this from all sides. Right. We need to get to the facts, pin those down. A lot of that goes away. And I'm not asking you to come in here and say who threw the swastika, not those kinds of facts.
Right. We don't. We certainly can, and we will. I think what we decided, we actually had that conversation when we were trying to put this proposal forward for this event, is that rather than make that the focus of the event, like what's happened, and what, you know, it is maybe try and document some of the recent incidents and have it as a handout or a flyer or something, but not make it a, you know, the centerpiece of what we're doing, because we are just trying to have this larger conversation and you know, kind of do education and have people think about how can we create a more inclusive.
Well, in terms of those specific incidents, I'd suggest that at our next meeting, when we have Lieutenant Stradley and other representatives here, that we focus just on those and say, you know, exactly what happened here, what did we do, what should we have done, what could we not do, I mean, what was beyond the, like, there are dead ends in these things, you know, and after they've talked to everybody in the neighborhood, they've turned over every block.
Sometimes you just
have to shrug your shoulders. But let's dispose of those, is what I'm saying, in this form, is my suggestion, and try to get those taken care of.
And sometimes it's not just the police, for instance. I think there was a sense that when the things happened at the school, well, the school board sent out some kind of broad message about tolerance and acceptance, but made no, I don't know if I'm correct here, but we certainly can get the information, made no direct reference to the incidents that happened at Westland High School. And there was no direct outreach from the principal to the, you know, so the sort of sense of, is that correct? You have Gary Kurtz at the high school, right?
Yes, my girls. High school. Yeah. There was a letter that came out, and the letter was fairly nebulous.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't talking about the specific instance that had created the necessity for the letter.
Yeah.
But I think that's a discussion more with the, well, I don't know,
the
I don't
school.
Know if we'll read it here, but I think that's a discussion with the schools,
yeah,
about what's
really
going on there that we need to.
Well, the one link that we do have with Westland High School is the school resource officer, Munch. So
okay. Right.
he's somebody that I'll hope to come to the next meeting. So
well,
we
you know,
that
I would
probably
ask.
Be great. And what we hear, I think he's well liked and wants
yeah.
the students and so
right.
forth like that. But I want to address a little bit of it. I actually, if we could stay out of the weeds on specific incidents at this meeting, we really came to talk about a town hall, and I agree with everyone. They need to be more, but. That said, I'm going to add 2 cents on that, and then hopefully we can back out on it. You can't totally dismiss anecdotal stuff, because then you're dismissing people's stories. And at some point, I think, yes, we would like to have people get up and maybe tell their stories. Please understand, that's really difficult for people sometimes, and particularly it's difficult for people of color to get up in a room of white people and say, if anyone's done this kind of diversity work before, maybe you all have, so don't feel like I'm putting anybody down or anything here.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult sometimes for people to come forth. You know, I even felt bad one night when I mentioned that I'm just going to keep this absolutely vague to a member of the group that, you know, God, it'd be great if you spoke up. And then I went, you know, I feel like sort of a white ass at this moment, because saying, you know, and I even know better than that, but, you know, I had a later conversation with the person. He said, no, you know, I just don't speak in public really well, and I don't, you know, really want to do that. But at some point, I think, you know, if not part of this event, then I have access to people who have put on story events that have been really transformative for communities and so forth like that. So it becomes a mixture of, yeah, we got this with facts and so forth. But I really kind of got to go with what Kathy's saying here, that we're really trying to do more of a community uplift, and again, I'll say again, proactive. So yeah, it would be fine to look into some of the specifics. And
I realize that everything's going to be anecdotal, and it is hard for people to share that. And I agree with that. But again, I think, for instance, you referred to Hispanic workers being stopped. Who saw that?
A member of our group can talk to that.
Yeah, that person should talk about exactly what they saw.
Exactly.
And they should talk about it with Lieutenant Stradley, so we can all hear. We hear both sides of that and what went on, and see if there was some explanation for it, and try to understand both sides of it together. But each specific story, that's what I'm talking about. But yeah, we've got to have to tell the story.
And again, one of our reasons for meeting with Lieutenant Stradley was to say, we understand that a lot of times it may look like the police are dealing more with people of color, but it may actually be because they're getting calls from the community. And maybe we can work in a community education effort together.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this is a possibility, but were the officers talking to them because they were workers in the neighborhood and might have seen something because they're in and out and around during the time the crimes took place?
Well, again, without having the person who actually told the story here, we probably got good of us to go into it too deeply.
I'm just saying that's one possible avenue that might have been the case.
Apparently, this is one of those cases where the neighbor really thought strongly that it must have been these people. And the person who's a member of the group, who's a member of the neighborhood, actually had to stand up for them and say, look, these folks are here working from the moment they get here until the moment they leave. Mm-hmm. And yet there was an investigation on checking the mud on the bottom of their boots, and, what did that match the mud on the house and so forth like that. Mm-hmm.
So, I think our major interest is in moving forward with such an event.
And in kind of alliance with what you were saying, because you are with the mapping the neighborhood and so forth. I mean, you're about reaching out.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And you too.
Yeah. And originally, when we talked about this, I think I said that. When there's a distrust of the police department, that in itself is a public safety issue and something that we need to take serious and take a look at. So I know that the event is what you came tonight, but everything, all the stories that you're sharing, it's really good for us as a board to hear, because we can learn, we can improve, and we have a good working relationship with the police department as citizens. So there are some things that, can work in parallel with your work. But that's, ultimately up to the board to discuss and determine and figure out what makes sense. Is there any other questions from board members?
I just had, I'm just trying to understand your remit, as you see it, though, really both the educational and public safety and, I guess, in part,
liaison
to follow up on issues that come and see what's being done to resolve. Is this the main?
Well, I would hedge that and say that, first and foremost, we're not, internal affairs for the police department. But, if there's an opportunity to discuss, how we're handling diversity training and learn a little more about that, I think that's within the realm of the board.
We've reported to the representatives from police department on speeding issues, road observing, traffic control, on community enforcement with regards to animal control in the public spaces. Mm-hmm. And so, we've got that role as well, directly with the police department, as well as more of the broad educational. So I would say the answer is yes.
Oh, okay.
We should mention we spent a little bit of time in our meeting with Lieutenant Stradley talking about what they are doing vis-a-vis training. And he did tell us that he he's responsible for training, and that approximately a third of their training now, or and this has been stepped up since the incident with Officer Newberry, has to do with, now how did he put it?
Ethics, really, and
ethics
dealing
and community
with the
relations,
public,
dealing
and,
with the public, community relations, essentially,
yeah,
which
yeah,
I think he thought, saw as the broad rubric for, you know, also dealing with racial profiling and some of these other issues that come up. We didn't get into great detail with him about, you know, that. I mean, that was encouraging. I think it would take more conversation to find out, you know, is that, how is that working? Is that, you know, what you know? But it is one of our interesting concerns is, you know, what is being done in the way of training. That's why we went and met with the OPOA to find out what they had available. What I understand from Lieutenant Stradley is they're doing a lot of online, individualized online training towards some requirement that they have to have 78 hours every 2 years or something like that.
Yeah, every 3 years, I think. But it was all digital. I mean, one of the things we thought was interesting with the OPOA is they do in-person training that was didn't cost very much.
Right.
I wanted to see something about cost.
Okay.
And that is, I believe that because of the personnel problems of Newberry as well as the previous a couple of previous officers they got rid of, which have strengthened the department. There were good things to do, but the additional cost of doing that has cut into the training budgets, and so all this has happened this year. There really hasn't been money to do as much training as they needed. Our police need more training here than police normally do because it's so quiet. if you're in North Portland, you're doing these things every day.
Right.
And they always have to be ready for something to go south.
Right.
And so it's not a problem for those officers, but here, you know, it's easy to lose it and not be out on the skills. So
I see. So
they need more training here, and so that budget is always has that effect. So we want to be sure that we're keeping that kind of thing in mind. They still do a great job. They have some training, like a video, interactive video thing where they react to scenarios and are trained on it. Sort of a, not virtual reality, but pretty close to it.
Nice.
And that's moved around in the county to different places. And they've had that here. They do what they can. But some of the person-to-person kinds of training you're talking about, I think, are probably limited by budget. And we can, maybe a city council, we can do something about that in the new budget coming up. We'll certainly try.
You brought up as well that they're down to about 5 people now, I think, right
well,
now.
Yeah,
they just hired a woman to be an officer, because one of the things we did talk about was diversity in the force itself, and he said it's getting incredibly difficult to hire
officers. Yeah.
Well, it's hard to keep the young good ones, because
sure, they want more action
than
you see in here.
Right.
But we've got a, it's amazing that we're the safest city in Oregon with so few officers. And a lot of it's because they really know what they're doing. They know where the problems are. They have an amazing amount of knowledge about what goes on in the city. And unfortunately, some of that comes across as profiling, you know, because they have that knowledge. It's like a hunter who knows where the game trails are, doesn't spend his time unilaterally through the forest, you know. And so part of this skill and what makes it safe is that they do know where the problems are. But there's a balance there. Those aren't the same question. There's somebody acting out of a racial bias. There's somebody acting out of knowledge. Two different things. But if I could, I wanted to talk about your list of things that you wanted to talk about in the meeting, because we sort of gotten down on this incidents, and I keep feeling the tension to bring it back to this. In the items, the four items that you listed here, there's the two number twos, I think, are.
I think he's also talking.
think you saw your goals as opposed to your training.
Yeah, yeah, I'm on the goals, because that's where you listed what you wanted to talk about at the meeting. And I wanted to address what you might cover in the meeting that I hope you're gonna have, that where we would have been a town hall meeting, and, mm-hmm. and the council said, no, it's bigger than a town hall meeting. And if it was done at a town hall meeting, questions can come on any topic.
Right.
And so it would be okay. harder to control the topic. That's why I suggested it be a separate meeting.
So we understand that, although we thought we had understood from Mayor Axelrod that he wanted to have thematic town halls, that they would cover a theme, and that one would be devoted to this theme. But so we were a little surprised that...
That's actually the
emphasis
of it.
Well, I'm a disservice because yeah. I was so enthusiastic.
Yeah.
You know, I said, no, this should be a separate meeting. I didn't want to be diverted into budget talks. And
it might be a matter of definition, too, as to what they view as a town hall versus
right.
what you're looking at from your perspective.
That we thought, too.
It's possible people don't share my perspective. Unlikely.
Well, no, I mean, you know, a town hall, a chance to sit down and interact on it, in your standpoint from the city council, open to any topic, they're looking at an opportunity to interact with the community, but on a specific topic. Their group is looking at doing that, which, you know, they're seeing it as an opportunity to talk to the town in a hall type setting, and that's sort of what they're looking at. I don't know what you'd call that, as opposed to your perspective of a town hall being open to any topic, or a politician, a city councilman, a representative opening it up to get feedback from his constituents. They're looking at an interaction on a lower level, which might be a different name.
Right, and because of those two possible ways of looking at it, that's why I thought it was better to settle it. But I just wanted to comment a little bit on these two, because these are sort of what constitute a sanctuary city.
You're talking about that.
You're talking about our mission statement.
I just wanted to bring that up for a minute. I was back in D.C., couple of weeks ago now, or maybe it was a week ago, and in one of the meetings we had the head of the ACLU talk about sanctuary cities, and she said that, you know, you hear a lot of talk about, the federal government being able to somehow force you to do these things, and she said they can't. They can't cause us to use our police force to do the job of a federal agency like ICE
We actually have it right on here. It's Oregon Statute 181A820.
Right, but I mean, at the federal level, the Bill of Rights, I think it was the 10th Amendment she referred to, somehow operated as that. They can't withhold funds, if we choose not to to do that, they can't withhold funds.
Really?
And I thought...
I'm surprised at.
So it made me much more... willing in a way to consider Westland becoming a sanctuary city, and it may be something that you want to push a little harder. Now I know today's sessions. I mean, I don't know if you follow the news, but sessions came out and said, we're going to go after these sanctuary cities. So there may be a court case. It
might get expensive.
And there's always you have to worry about more the informal actions where they. Say, we didn't discriminate against sanctuary cities, they just didn't qualify on this.
That's a whole lot.
In which case, my answer to that is, we're not a sanctuary city, but gosh, our police force is a little too busy to help you out with ICE right now.
Oregon legally has not been able to do this for years because of that statute.
How they get out of that is through the discretionary grant processes. They can ask questions and load the points in certain ways. So there are ways to avoid alter your competitiveness.
So we've been chewing on this for about an hour now.
Yeah.
And really appreciate you coming and speaking tonight.
How do we move forward?
Well, that's a good question, and you know, one that I think as a board we'll need to discuss.
Okay.
And maybe just food for thought as we work on this. I would suggest reaching out to Lieutenant Stradley and going on a ride-along and just observing the nature of police work. I've done that, I think, 4 or 5 times now. Councilor Martin's done it quite a bit.
Yeah.
And it's just good to just kind of see, you know, how they're doing their police work, and that'll be helpful, I think, too. So.
Yeah, thanks. We actually talked to them about that.
Yeah, we did, yeah. I thought it might be a good way for us to see.
Another thing that I would suggest, I don't think our balance of our meeting is going to take more than a couple of minutes.
No,
but I think there are some people who would like to informally talk as well, if you wanted to wait around for about 5 or 10 minutes to finish the balance of the meeting rather than pack up and leave.
Well, I was about to ask, are these meetings open to the public?
Yeah.
All of them. Yeah.
There's actually some of the other items I'm interested in, this disaster preparedness.
Yeah.
All right.
But, I mean, did you want us to leave so you could discuss something to yourself? No, okay.
Yeah.
Behind your back.
No. Yeah, Councilor.
Well, I talked a minute ago about the idea of following up on some of these anecdotal problems trying to get more information and to have a discussion between our staff and the people who have the, if you bring in everything you know about these, maybe the people who are the most immediate source of information, and couldn't we use what would you think about using that next meeting? Did she say something about having a plan? You were going to have this meeting and then next meeting you were going to meet with Stradley and then we're going to be here?
So
could we use that to discuss some of these things and maybe put some of them to rest?
You know, let's talk with Lieutenant Stradley and see, because that kind of goes into an area that I don't know too much about in terms of, like, revealing particular cases.
Mm.
So let's just float that question out to the liaison, and we'll see. And if there's an opportunity to do that, I think that would be really helpful. So we want to be able to look at it from a 360 perspective. So, but it needs to be done in a way that's, you know, that respects the circumstances of what we're talking about. So,
if I will put out a call. I mean, we're all kind of busy, so the amount of time we can put to this volunteer, as you probably know as a member of this board, is limited. But since, you know, I'm going to see if there's a member of our committee who wants to try and track down, you know, dates, actual, you know, facts around some of the things we've heard. Maybe not naming individuals, right, because I think that wouldn't be a good idea. But and, you know, also their sense of the response if the police were involved, their sense of the response by the police. We could try and do that. I don't know how quickly we can pull together, but I could put out a call to see if somebody wants to do that. Okay,
great. Okay. Well, if there's not anything else from the board, we can move on to the next agenda item. Okay. So let's see. The next one is Map Your Neighborhood. And that would be Ms. Duncan, Chris. So it's been a busy month with Chris and Judy. And just to lead things off, we got a message from Courtney Flynn that the Emergency Preparedness Fair was going to happen again this year. And 2 years ago, this was up at the LDS Church off of Rosemont. And I don't know, did you have a chance to see that when that was? It was just great because there were different booths all kind of themed around disaster preparedness. And gosh, how many people do you think attended that?
Several hundred.
Several
for
hundred.
Sure.
So.
Do they have a date or an approximate time?
Yes. Yes, I've been at the last. Judy and I were at the last two planning meetings.
Judy and Chris have just, I mean, doing an awesome job. We've stepped up. And
It will be held September 27th, I want to say. September 28th, and it'll be from 4 to 8, I think. Let me pull that up. Yeah, 4 to 8 p.m. They're going to use the same venue as last year. So right now they're reaching out to the different parties that participated the last time to see. Also, we're incorporating a little of the feedback as far as some of the presentations. Mm-hmm. So we have a little smoother transitions. You were there last time.
No, I wasn't.
Sure.
But
okay. Yeah, and
I heard.
Yeah, yeah. Shorten a few of them and be a little more to the point. What are effective giveaways? You know, what do people want to know? What they most want to know? What we're hearing from the feedback from the last one is how to purify water, and what to do about human waste. Over an extended period of time, because there's a lot, there are lots of food lists out. What food should I have? But these are two areas that are still not a whole lot of out there, so we're kind of focusing on how to have those answers, possibly as presentations this time.
Any updates on Map Your Neighborhood?
And, well, yes. Judy went through and did a roundup of all of the, you know, the forms that are out there. She now has numbers. I think we've identified 250. So we're going to need to get more if we're going to have some available for the fair in September. Plus, I was hoping we would hear back from Courtney by now. She was going to post the survey that we were going to do. We had this extensive, you know, remember list. So we put together the questions. She was going to post it out, send a real short little Survey Monkey about, since you put your name down or expressed interest in a fair.
So we don't have any results on that yet.
No,
let me,
we don't.
I'll put that in my bucket. I'll follow through and get that.
Well, there was that, and then the other thing that she was supposed to report back out today with regard to the preparedness fair is that, you know, we understood that last time the city had contributed about $3,000 for some of the logistic and literature and, you know, promotion of the event. Knowing that it's a different scenario right now, we just wanted to know one way or the other whether or not those resources were going to be available or not. And in fact, we did not know, even getting the letter distributed, will City of West Lynn be a major sponsor, and will the invite letter, can it be on West Lynn letterhead or not? She was going to check on that. She was going to have her one-on-one with Eileen and then come back. So, because Latter-day Saints don't want to be. They don't want it on there. They said it could be a put, you know, kind of turn some people off. And they would like the city, but then we didn't hear back whether the city can. So we're kind of like, everything is ready to go out, but are we going to, will it be our board itself that will be considered?
So I've heard on the letter, and so we can use the City of West Lynn for that.
Okay, all right.
And with the 3,000, is the group open to like a private-public partnership? Because just thinking about the city's budget and where it's at right now, there are people in the community that I think would be willing to donate a little bit.
I raised that, and Judy offered to even go out and do asks as well. So
it's okay for just...
Nobody's against it?
I don't see. I mean, I can't speak for the whole committee, but I don't see why they would be.
Okay. Good.
You know, you want this to be the most effective one. There's one coming up this month in Lake Oswego, and so going to try to go. Yeah, there's the group there is doing one. And so, in fact, we kind of use some of their templates since they're further with the latest and the greatest. That one is going to be on the 26th from 5 to 8.
And where's
and
that
I'm
going
not,
to be?
I think that is also at a Latter-day Saints church.
Okay.
In April.
Off Cruiseway.
Lake Oswego, April 26th. Somewhere, at Palisades. Is there one up there?
Yeah, there is.
Okay, that's where it will be.
Okay.
So in terms of, we're just trying to find back as far as Map Your Neighborhood goes. There's a few inquiries that came in from Christine. We got together and kind of re-scripted the presentation, so if they don't, if the host doesn't feel comfortable trying to do it themselves based on the video, you know, one of us can go, or we'll have a kind of a uniform script that anybody can go and respond to with the literature to try to get, you know, try to be more responsive if somebody says, hey, you know, I can get five neighbors, we'd like to do more. And also to do something about just even meeting with a one-on-one to explain more about what it's about or what they can do just to even prepare to help their neighbors immediately around them if they can't get a whole neighborhood done. There seemed to be, the last time, kind of holding off until you could get to that critical mass of 12. And we're taking the stance of, hey, if we can even get 2, 3, 5 in better position to respond. And I'm thinking that this winter's snowstorm, again, is a prime time. It's still on people's minds, those that lost power and what have you, about, oh, what would I do if it was longer than 2 days?
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We also have an exciting opportunity to work with the Westland Public Library to have packets from Map Your Neighborhood that we can check out to folks that want to present a meeting. And I'm going to kind of advocate for maybe a section towards the front when you walk in that could be kind of like a month where they have a disaster preparedness kind of spot, so maybe we can increase some attention awareness there. So,
and basically, it'll be the steps and an example, since these are in short supply. Just okay, here's what it's about, and here's who to call.
One of the things we had talked about as a committee was putting together a display case that we could move around. If we could put something together, we could have that at the library.
Yeah.
What's in the bucket?
Yeah.
Some basic survival tools that you can put as a small container as a bucket and have, and that could be used in the library display. September is Disaster Preparedness Month, so that's plenty of time for us to put something together and have the library have time to plan for it to be displayed there. And then in the interim, if we do finish getting that together, we could, as was discussed last year, if there are small groups or, like, you know, other events that occur, we can bring that out. And certainly at the booth in the summer during the music in the park, have that display for that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Our goal, like, for those types of outreach is to at least get through those first, you know, 6 to 9 steps about what you're going to do immediately with your household.
Right.
So that throughout West Lynn, people are thinking head, hands, feet, and have it by the bedside. If we can even get that done, we're a step further towards safety. So.
Yeah, I sent my pictures, but I sent them from Facebook, and I guess she couldn't pull it off of Facebook. I'll have to do that again, because I have that package that I sent pictures to Courtney of a bedside
setup,
bug-out bag.
Right.
That was basically, you know, low-cost helmet. You can use a bike helmet and gloves. And
exactly.
Because the first thing you do when you have an earthquake or something falls on your house is glass everywhere.
Yep.
And you step out of bed and you've already become another victim of the event.
Yep.
So I'll have to try and get that sent to her again so we can do that.
Okay.
The other thing was we were going to try and see if the city had resources, and it sounds like that's not going to be the place to go looking for resources, but for converting our paper map of where we've done the presentations of Map Your Neighborhood to a electronic version of the map.
Right.
So we can start to fill in the 2s and 3s, even if it's just 2 and 3 at a time, instead of this street has been covered.
Could we explore potentially using Google Maps for that? So we have, I think Lieutenant Stradley suggested that. There may be a solution that's free that we can use.
You just want to plot things on a map?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's a website I found during the election where you just upload a list of addresses and it plots it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's around
that'd be great.
To the right. It's like geolocated or something. And then each time you get to change your list, you just upload it again. It'll give you the map.
Because then we can take all the addresses that have already been entered from folks doing the course and plot that.
I can, you know what,
that'd be good.
Give me a list of addresses, I'll do it for you.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, it'd be nice to have, you know, consolidated records, easy to update.
And it's shareable that way, instead of like get out the paper and unroll it and
Hold it up.
Right. I think it'd be fun to even pit, you know, see how much coverage we can have on our neighborhood associations and, you know, report back. Fulton is 40% covered.
I know, but
you'll get yours.
It'd be nice because it's contagious, you know.
Yeah.
So that would be good.
A little bit of a competitive
aspect to it. I checked in with Ken Warner at Parks and Rec about having a booth at the concert series. And so they have increased inquiries from folks that want to actually be a vendor there.
Right.
So we're kind of, he doesn't want to commit. He thinks it can happen. But we're also a little victim to our success here. And so other advisory boards are keen to have presence.
Maybe you can team with them.
Well, yeah, like TVFR is going to be there.
Right. And so... going forward, it may look a little different. We will have presence there. One of the things that just kind of working with the other chairs is coming up with maybe a compromise where maybe one week it's public safety, the next week it's sustainability, the week after it's neighborhood association presidents. And, you know, we tended to see the same people kind of at those concerts, and it might be nice for people that are coming to the concerts to have something different that's community-based each week. So we did, you know, Denny and Grant, I think, started this, and they planted a seed, and now it's growing. So just a heads up that the summer concert series may change in terms of, like, how involved we are, but there's so many opportunities for us to plug in, whether it's the Old Time Fair, Disaster Preparedness Fair, neighborhood associations, so we'll figure it out. So is there anything else for Map Your Neighborhood?
I think that's as far as we've gotten in the last month.
Okay, well, great work. So, teen driving safety. First, I want to thank Thomas for recommending Street Survival. I went to it, and it was awesome. It was unbelievable.
Didn't you want to be a participant?
I did. It was just so positive for the kids. So that they each had their own instructor, and just really great learning opportunities. Hands-on, you know, they had to do figure eights, they had to do kind of a stop through a, you know, course that was wet, they experienced hydroplaning, and it was really fun because they would do, you know, they would probably do 10 runs during their time, and in the beginning they were really tentative and nervous, but towards the end, they were really, really gunning it, and it was great because they were learning the limits of their vehicle. I think they all came away with an appreciation that, there's a responsibility that comes with being behind the wheel, and it's not a joke. It's, you know, it's important to be present, put down the phone, take it serious. So we sent 4 kids this year, thanks to Dennis Ritchie. I hope that this is something that we can continue to do with the Youth Advisory Council. And I mean, they really stepped up too, as far as getting the word out and recruiting folks. And we ended up having a couple kids that couldn't make it. But we had reserves, and so all 4 slots were still filled.
Good.
There was a newsletter, the weekly newsletter for Westland, and we got a nice little promo in there for our work there. And I guess the city manager is going to send that out to the League of Oregon Cities as just kind of like a little case study of like our advisory board and what we did on that front.
Nice.
So,
and what did it cost? Was it $120?
$75 per person.
$75 per person. Will they do it? I mean, is there some way we could do it and just let people who were interested in doing that participate? And, like, I mean, we host it, but people pay their own way.
Yeah.
Well, they normally come out twice a year. I think they cap the class at around 30 or 40 people. And so last October, we were trying to get our 4 slots in there, and we didn't get in time, and they sold out.
Oh,
so this time we locked them in as soon as the registration came open, and we had four spots that were tied for West Lynn, and then we substituted names into it as soon as we had the selection of the four for the scholarships.
Now, when they come here twice a year, is that because they have to go so many other places? I mean,
well, it's expensive for them to put it on. It's subsidized through the BMW Club of America or something like that. And they're capped as to how much they can charge. And one of the big problems they have is that it's all volunteer instructors. And so they can't necessarily ask them to do more than what they're doing at a certain location just because they're taxed on the manpower.
I was, you know, I feel like senior drivers would benefit from it. I really do. Because as you get older, your reactions slow. You do need to have practice those skills.
Well, the structure that was set up initially for those under 21, they've opened it up, I think, up to age 26. And if there are spaces available, they will allow other adults in. But I don't think Portland's had anything open in its registration in the last few years.
My thought processes were initially, you know, maybe we could get the adult community center involved and they could create a special class just for seniors. But then when you said that it's being taught by BMW drivers, I lost interest in the whole thing.
There was a program a couple of years ago, and I don't remember if it was through DPSST or somewhere else down in the Salem area, but it was run by the state. They had a simulator that they're making available to the public, and it was focused on winter driving. Mm-hmm. And there was a fee for two people per session, and I couldn't convince my wife and daughter both to go. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get the rest of the info.
Well, you bring up a great point, Bob. You know, we've been focused on teen driving safety because of, you know, the four incidents that happened, but there are definitely challenges with seniors that are driving the community, and at some point down the road, we'll probably take a look at it. Especially with the age of baby boomers that are...
There are a couple of programs for the community education program that you get the schedule of classes from Clackamas Community College, mm-hmm. as well as from the City Parks and Recreation, where they have the 55 and Alive driver training class.
Yes. Oh, wow. Yeah.
And that's specifically to the older driver.
Yep.
I don't know what the price on it is. I don't remember. I know it just came out here a couple of weeks ago. I didn't look specifically on that.
Well, it's challenging. My grandfather, he's 93 and just had a stroke, and he still wants to drive. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, we're trying to take the keys away. So, you know, all the family needs support, too, in this. Anyway. But thank you, Thomas, for suggesting.
Let's see where the funds are when summer's over, or as through the summer.
Yeah.
I
can pull it off again for October.
That'd be great. Okay. It'd be really good. I think, you know, if we could send even more, it would be fantastic.
Maybe the council can come up with some books
for the youth group.
For the youth group,
raise.
Yeah, they might raise some
funds. Do a fundraiser. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, as far as fundraising for the different projects we're working on, there's just an untapped resource here in West Lynn. I kind of like that we've established ourselves as just being a little independent and just getting it done. There's kind of a resilience to us. There's other advisory boards that I noticed that are always asking for the city for things. Mm-hmm. And we've really kind of... You know, last year or so, just really gotten stuff done, and it's nice. And so, anyway.
April 24?
Sorry?
April 24, is that what we're looking at?
For the next meeting?
Uh-huh.
Yep. So.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Is there anything else? Go to the order? Okay, so next meeting, Monday, April 24th, here at 6 p.m. Motion to adjourn?
So moved. Second.
Okay, thank you, everybody.
Thank you all for
Jay, you'll be back, but I'll be